T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
So Jack Del Rio last night on Twitter. You can follow Jack, by the way, at Coach Del Rio. He has a passion for football and its intensity. He's got a passion for music, golf, fishing, and chilling on the beach. He loves his family, and he's a man of faith. The JackDelRioFoundation.org is something that you can donate to. He's got that link on his Twitter profile. So he responded to a troll on Twitter with Bite D's. The gentleman was accusing Jack and not only Jack, but Ron Rivera and apparently Jason Wright for this Daron Payne drama, which I don't really think is much of a drama. I mean, I don't know why this is a drama. Well, it is a drama because they tend to be, and it's not just, you know, specific to this particular group. It tends to be league-wide. And I saw this back and forth between this San Francisco beat reporter, the 49ers beat reporter, and Javon Kinlaw. Did you see that, Brendan, yesterday?
Yeah, that was a very uncomfortable interview.
Wow. Apparently, this guy is just a total beat reporter troll, trying to get at all these players and get reactions from the players. I mean, that's kind of his MO, and he got Kinlaw really rolling, although much of it was indecipherable from my standpoint. But anyway, you could tell that Javon was really upset with this particular reporter on some sort of YouTube interview. But anyway, you know, we know where, you know, the bad teams in particular, the bad teams, which, you know, have to deal with media members asking tough questions or, you know, people like me being critical of the team, it gets old for them and they'll bite back a little bit. And I guess Daron bit back at a Ben Standing report earlier in the week that ultimately turned out to be pretty accurate. Beyond that, you know, that's, I guess, what they were talking about in relation to the Daron Payne drama, as well as, you know, the reporting that the team isn't going to sign him to a long-term extension. He's playing in his fifth year. And, you know, there's the possibility that he isn't thrilled about going into a final year of a contract without more more stability, long-term assurances. Ben did tweet out yesterday that Daron Payne was not at OTAs yesterday, that he had skipped yesterday's OTA session, and as he reported earlier in the week, had skipped some team drills due to frustration over lagging contract extension talks. By the way, Montez Sweat missed all of this week's OTA sessions after Ron Rivera said after day one he expected Montez to be there day two. So this vaunted defensive line, no Chase Young, no Montez Sweat, limited participation from Daron Payne. But it'll be fine. They've got a 12-13 win offense, so don't worry about it. But the Bite D's from Jack Del Rio on the troll tweet was one thing. But this was the other. Jack Del Rio on Twitter last night retweeted an actual announcement about the hiring by the Wizards of Wes Unseld Jr. Wes Unseld Jr., Brendan, was hired on what date exactly?
I think it's safe to say it was about almost a year ago. So,
well, let me help you with that. It was July 17th of 2021. the Washington Wizards put out a tweet. Official, we've named Wes Unseld Jr. the 25th head coach in franchise history. Welcome home, coach. That was from the official Washington Wizards Twitter account on July 17th of last year. So roughly 10 months ago, the Wizards hired Wes Unseld Jr. I think most of you knew that. And announced that they hired Wes Unseld Jr. Well, last night, as part of his Twitter activity, Jack Del Rio retweeted the official announcement from July 17th of 2021, of last year, on the hiring of Wes Unseld Jr. And he said and wrote, "Congrats, Wes, wishing you the best, exclamation point." Of course, your initial reaction is, "Hey, Coach, Coach Del Rio, Coach Bite D's, he was hired 10 months ago. Did you know that? Did you think this was a tweet from today that he just got hired? Or was he doing this as part of last night's entertainment barrage that he was on, trying to troll back at people with Bite D's and congratulating Wes Unseld Jr. on his hire? If it's the latter, congratulations, golf clap for Jack Del Rio last night. If it's not, what's wrong with him? You don't think he actually knows that Wes Unseld Jr. was hired 10 months ago, do you?
Why would you respond to a 10-month-old tweet?
Because he just picked something random to be like, look, watch me do this. Look at the reaction I get to this.
I would say if you look at his Twitter account, that is not something he's ever done before. And giving him the benefit of the doubt that he's just trying to be funny, doing a thing that is not funny and doesn't make any sense, is not some sort of higher comedy that we're just not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like it's a weird thing to do. He's a bit of a weird guy, and he does weird things.
Did I miss any other Twitter activity?
You know, there were some other things we don't need to talk about.
There was what?
There were some other things we don't need to talk about.
Were they comments from him or just likes?
Likes.
Okay. What? I mean, he's very conservative politically.
No, it's not a conservative thing. Although there were some of those things that were questionable at best. But no, I mean, you know, we don't need to talk about it. It's okay. He's having fun on Twitter.
Look, if he was out for just reaction last night, he did a great job. And if he's sitting back, you know, holding his phone, reading the reactions and laughing out aloud hysterically, I think that's kind of funny. And at the same time, it's like, what are you doing? Seriously. Your defense was horrendous last year.
I would simply say if you had the 29th ranked defense last year, you should not spend as much time on Twitter.
Absolutely horrendous last year. Many in the fan base or what's left of the fan base think that you suck as a defensive coordinator. I don't necessarily agree at all, but I do think this is a rather big year for Jack Del Rio and Ron Rivera's culture rebuild and team rebuild. I mean, they've already set the expectation bar pretty high. He responded a couple of weeks ago to some sort of compliment about his defense, right? This was what it was. It was when CBS Sports moved Washington up like 12 spots in their power rankings to number 13 overall, even though it said number 12, the retweet was. It was actually number 13, and he retweeted it and said, that was smart. And, you know, so he's been active on Twitter before. But he came to the defense of Daron Payne last night. Some of you would applaud that, and that's fine. But I would say coming to the defense of anybody should be, hey, tune it out and let's go out and kick some backsides this year, because we have every right to have been criticized for our performance last year because we were horrible. But remember, if they had just had some of those defensive backs at phase two of their offseason activity last year, probably would have been a much different story.
Now they don't have the defensive line at phase three. I can't wait to see what happens next offseason.
Well, why wasn't, you know, anything? There was a lot of emphasis put on the fact that the secondary guys, the new guys, weren't available for phase two, and that was a reason, if not an excuse, for the pass defense. But not having Chase Young for the entirety of phase three was never mentioned, even though his performance was subpar before the injury. And now he doesn't have Montez Sweat, Chase Young, which, by the way, Chase Young obviously is in rehab and is recovering from an injury. Which, you know, I should mention this. JP was on with me the other day on my podcast, and we haven't talked about this, but it makes sense. Just the possibility that Chase Young and even Logan Thomas could start training camp on the PUP list. And if that happens, will that be an indication that they might not be ready for the regular season? Logan Thomas's injury happened in December. The injury to Chase Young happened in early November, right? It was the Tampa game.
Yeah, I mean, it was the ACLs take a while to repair. Like, it's not like it's...
Yeah.
I know we all remember Adrian Peterson came back in, what was it, like 7 months?
Well, RG3 is the all-timer.
Yeah.
Because it was a torn ACL and a torn LCL and all in for week one, and he was somewhat ready to play.
Yeah.
He was out on the field for that Monday night opener against Philadelphia. I don't know if he was actually ready to play.
But then you remember guys like Jamal Murray who are going on 15 months.
Right.
So it's...
But there must have been something else with him. That's of all of the serious injuries of the last couple of years in sports that we pay attention to, that's the one that, you know, why wasn't he back within a year? Took more than a year. Anyway, there you go. Jack Del Rio, pretty active on Twitter last night. There's a couple of football notes that I want to get to when we come back, and then Pete Haley will join us and we'll have a Commanders conversation. We'll get his thoughts on Jack Del Rio and more. And Eric Flack from Channel 9 will join us at 8 a.m. To talk about this vote next week in Virginia and more. Let me just mention to you that BetMGM is the official sports betting partner of the Washington Nationals, and they are welcoming you with a very special baseball offer. All you have to do is place a $10 moneyline wager on the Nats, and they're going to give you $200 in free bets when you use my bonus code, KevinS200. It doesn't matter if you win or lose the bet. You just have to place the bet, and you're going to get $200 in free betting opportunities. Enjoy baseball season like never before and score a big win on your very first bet at BetMGM. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com. Use my bonus code, KevinS200, to receive $200 in free bets when you bet $10 on the Nationals. Sign up today and find out why nothing beats a win at BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Virginia and D.C. only. New customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, 1-800-522-4700.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Are you ready?
Wanted to mention something real quickly because I don't talk a lot about this sport, but I did pay attention to the French Open the other day. I'm not going to spend more than 2 minutes on this, I promise you. But there is, for most of you that don't know this, an incredible story developing at the French Open and in tennis overall. His name is Carlos Alcaraz. He's a Spanish player, 19 years old, and he has been on a roll over the last 6 to 12 months that's been incredible. He has essentially gone from top 500 in the world to number 6 in the world overnight. And has become a major star. He had beaten in Madrid Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal back-to-back, and then beat Zverev in the final in the Madrid Open and became the men's champion just a few weeks ago. It was his fourth title on the men's tour in 2022, and he became the first player in the history at his age to beat three top five players in the same event. He is a Nadal fan, obviously, as a Spaniard his whole life. His Instagram followers in just the last 3 months have gone from 300,000 to 1.3 million. Google reported a 200% worldwide spike in searches for Alcaraz. He's become an overnight sensation and star in the sport of tennis. And the other day faced a match point in his second round match at the French Open, but rallied to win in five sets to advance to the third round. Just something to keep an eye on. I'm here for your tennis information, but really it was an epic comeback. And the buzz around this particular player in tennis is growing. It's really interesting. This country, and I've talked about this a lot, does not care about tennis. The ratings are horrible unless Serena or Venus are playing. And, you know, there are lots of reasons for it. But the rest of the world really loves tennis. And Carlos Alcaraz has become a major worldwide star overnight and is thought to have a decent chance to win the French Open, but rallied the other day from two sets to one down and facing a match point in the fourth set to beat another Spanish player, Ramos Vinolas, in five sets. So if you, on this weekend of Memorial Day, because there's no basketball on, there will be some hockey, there will be some golf, but if you want to tune in for one of sports' latest sensations, try to find Carlos Alcaraz on whatever network. The Tennis Channel has been showing the French Open. I don't know. Does NBC pick it up? NBC's always had it in the past. Might be an ESPN thing now. I don't know. But Carlos Alcaraz is a star in that sport right now. A lot of charisma, too, to just his overall kind of demeanor, look, and style of play. So, Bill Barnwell, every year at ESPN.com, puts out when the off season is kind of complete, even though we've got more to go, puts out what he calls his rankings of the best and worst NFL off seasons of 2022. Which teams improved, which teams declined, plus what went wrong and what's next. And, you know, on these lists, and this is the list time of the year between now and the beginning of the season, it's fun to see what others are talking about. We did yesterday, Brendan, on the show, CBS Sports had a ranking of the NFL divisions. The NFC East came in dead last in terms of strength of division. AFC South was second. Somebody pointed out, and I appreciate you doing this, and I should have picked up on this, that the seventh-ranked division in front of the NFC East was the AFC South, which the NFC East plays this year, and that the fifth-ranked division was the NFC North, which the NFC East also plays. So, yes, the NFC East may be, you know, it's a debate, but maybe the worst division in football entering 2022. But the two divisions that they are playing in totality, the NFC North and the AFC South, are on their schedule. So that's good news. Not to mention that they get to play the other NFC East teams, which is why in some ways, it's mostly because of last year's records, or only because of last year's records, depending on the strength of schedule, you know, format that you use. But it's why Washington and Dallas and the Giants and the Eagles schedules in a lot of these rankings are considered to be among the easiest heading into the year. But anyway, back to Bill Barnwell, who ranked the off seasons 1-32. He had Washington as having a not very good off season. He had them as the sixth worst offseason in the NFL over the last couple of months. There's more time to go. They could add another player. They didn't add James Bradbury. But he writes, what went right is that Washington swiftly addressed its needs on offense. After Ryan Fitzpatrick went down for the season opener in 2021, they targeted a more significant replacement and landed Carson Wentz in a deal with the Colts. They replaced expensive guard duo Scherff and Flowers with Norwell and Trey Turner, giving them two bruising run blockers on the interior, albeit ones who are past their professional peak. They will add a third-round compensatory pick for losing Scherff to Jacksonville. By the way, I want to just point out offensively, you know, I talked at the end of last week about internally people of note believing that they have a juggernaut of an offensive football team that they are going to unleash on the league in 2022. That inside that building, they believe that they have, quote, a 12-13 win offense, closed quote, is what somebody close to the situation told me is the inside the building belief about them offensively. And while I have been very optimistic about their skill position players and the fact that they have upgraded a quarterback, what we haven't spent a lot of time talking about actually is just what is the offensive line going to be like this year? You know, the offensive line has been very well coached. It's been coached up by John Matsko. He's done a great job. They've had some talent on that offensive line. Look, they've taken the Sam Cosmi pick looks like it may be, you know, an absolute home run. I think everything we saw from Cosmi indicates that, A, he is a tackle, probably a right tackle, and that's where he's going to play this year. And then what they did with Leno Jr. last year, and then, by the way, re-upping him. But the interior of that offensive line, even if you want to say, well, Brandon Scherff wasn't always available, you know, or Eric Flowers was too expensive, right now on paper, they got worse on their offensive line. And, you know, it is important to note that Norwell and Trey Turner are, as Bill Barnwell writes, past their professional peak. More importantly, though, Barnwell, on what went right, writes, given their propensity for trying to win the offseason under owner Daniel Snyder, the Commanders didn't hand out any spectacularly expensive deals to free agents. Their largest average annual salary on a deal, Wentz trade aside, was $5 million. Last year, they had the big splash of William Jackson, so Coach Rivera might understandably have been shy about making any more significant moves in free agency. Well, part of that obviously was that they didn't have necessarily the funds to go out and be aggressive in free agency. They traded down in the first round. He said that was right, landing Jahan Dotson as the fifth wideout off the board. And now they can roll out Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, and Dotson in three wide receiver sets. I would add that they can roll out De'Ami Brown in four wide receiver sets and other three wide receiver sets. I'm telling you guys, De'Ami Brown is a big part of their plan in 2022. Now, he's going to have to be healthy, and he's going to have to be totally comfortable with everything they're doing playbook-wise, but they love De'Ami Brown's talent and believe that he is a true number two in this league. Barnwell about what went wrong. The trade for Wentz was widely panned, with the Commanders eating his entire salary and sending the equivalent of the 36th pick in a typical draft to the Colts for a player Indy was desperate to trade. Rivera basically said that he was willing to pay whatever it would take for the right quarterback, and while that made sense while they tried to trade for Russell Wilson, it's difficult to see whom they were competing against for Wentz. Yeah, I agree with that. What could they have done differently? Wentz is better than Marcus Mariota, Barnwell writes, but after disappointing two different organizations that desperately wanted him to succeed, I wonder whether the Commanders would have been better off holding on to their picks and signing Mariota to start. waiting out the veteran market would have given them a chance of trading for a smaller haul for Ryan, Matt Ryan, and acquiring Baker Mayfield or Jimmy Garoppolo at a discount. Well, nobody wants Mayfield. And Garoppolo is hurt and can't get here until training camp, or wouldn't have been able to get here until training camp at the earliest. He writes, they couldn't have known how everything would go at the start of the offseason, which is true, which is why I think they acted so quickly on Wentz, because there was no predicting necessarily that they were going to have a shot at anybody else, even if they knew Ryan was going to become available. But Rivera's focus on locking in any sort of upgrade on Taylor Heinicke without being sensitive enough to the price was a negative. So he has them as their sixth worst offseason of this offseason. Now, if it's any comfort to you, the sixth worst offseason last year in his ranking of the offseasons of 2021, the Los Angeles Rams. So there you go. The Rams last year were in the same exact spot that Washington is in this year in Barnwell's ranking of off-seasons. I'm not sure why that was when they acquired Matt Stafford, but apparently he thought it was too expensive. All right, more Commanders conversation with Pete Haley from NBC Sports Washington next.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Pete Haley is a writer and podcaster and one of the people that covers our Washington football team. And more for NBC Sports Washington. You can find Pete on Twitter at Pete Haley NBCS. And he's part of JP's podcast and has been from the beginning. By the way, when's the last time you played golf with JP?
I haven't played golf with JP in a while, but Mitch and I, the other member of that podcast, have become like retirees who play golf with each other multiple times a week. And in fact, I'm scheduled to play with him about an hour after this radio hit, and then we're going to get rained on probably hole seven. But JP's been holding out on me a little bit.
You mean he doesn't take you guys to his home course, the iconic Congressional Country Club, blue and or gold, once a week or once a month?
I don't want to, you know, air anything out on here, because I'm sure I'll get back to him. JP has taken us there before, and any amount of times he's brought us there is good enough for me. I would never have access to that place. It's gorgeous. JP is always looking out for us, but I think with his 4 to 8 jobs, he just has lost a lot of golfing time. So I've pivoted over to Mitch, and he's become kind of my golf go-to.
Closer to 8 probably than 4. By the way, your good friend JP, who I enjoy a lot too, is one of the best at handicap management. I've never seen a 19, you know, put up more 85s and 84s than JP Finley. So good for him. So Pete, where are you from originally?
I am from Rockville, Maryland. Went to Rockville High School and then had a brief appearance at Gettysburg College before ending up at the University of Maryland. So I'm Maryland born and bred.
All right, so you are younger than a lot of us that cover the team, and I was curious, and one of the reasons I reached out to you is, do you care about this stadium story and ultimately where it ends up?
This is an interesting question, and I've started to care more about it just because it's my job, and it's getting quite interesting, and it's also getting closer. Like at the beginning, when it was 2018 and people were talking about it, I was like, who cares? This is so far in the distance. But now it feels like we're sort of close to when things have to happen. But if we're being honest, Kevin, I don't really care a ton. I care way more about Jahan Dotson and Curtis Samuel. I care more about the jerseys. Like, there are a lot of things I care more about than the stadium stuff. And I don't know if it's because it's gotten so political, if it's still just somewhat of a non-reality, just sort of this hypothetical thing, and because it's just complicated. So I don't care a ton. I care for my job, but I don't really spend a lot of my personal time thinking about it.
But you've been a fan of the team your entire life. You're from here. You've been a fan. And I think this is interesting that you answered it that way. I mean, all of us have to, you know, that do what we do have to address it. We've got to talk about it. And certainly the comments from old Chap Peterson the other day were provocative enough to get us, you know, into a conversation. But it sounds like we are probably aligned in this. And I was wondering whether or not it was an age thing more than anything else. And that is, it's so far off in the future. The idea of Woodbridge and Dumfries for Maryland guys like you and me has always been kind of a non-starter. But beyond that, it's like, I don't even know how I'm going to feel about the team in 5 to 6 years. And I think this is part of what Peterson was referring to. Like, he's concerned that the erosion of the fan base is going to continue, but my contention has been, well, there's a younger fan base out there for them to tap into.
Yeah, look, I don't want to feed into this, like, millennials don't care about anything but laying around in their sweatpants and drinking hard seltzers and just not doing anything. And I'm 27, so I'm a part of that group. But, like, it's not really anything that has interested me that much. And, yes, when someone like Peterson comes out and says such heavy things, okay, then that can get me to pay a little bit of attention. But when it's mostly just speculation and is it going to go here and how's the traffic going to affect things and, oh, is it going to have this great entertainment venue next to it? Like, all that stuff, whenever. When it shows up, it shows up. And if I'm still working in this industry and journalism is about as volatile as it gets, then I'll have to drive out there and see what it's like. But you're right. 5-6 years from now, I mean, where this team was 5 years ago, look, I mean, not necessarily anything special on the field, but they were two names ago. They had a much more committed fan base. There was not very much Dan Snyder allegations out in public, maybe stuff behind the scenes, but it wasn't steady, but it was certainly more steadier than it is right now. So who knows how ugly this thing could be in 5 more years and how many people will be around to even care about it. So I think you're right. There's people's feelings are changing constantly, and it feels like there's an exponential amount of changing going on. So the stadium is going to be a huge project, but I think me and people in my group are just kind of like, you know, this team has been so bad for so long, I might just be watching Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and Tom Brady Jr. having fun
as
on
an NFL fan
and not even care. Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking to Pete Haley from NBC Sports Washington. I've had some conversations at various times over the last couple of years with people out there who have, you know, just wanted, how do we get people like you back? You know, the people that were alive and were so diehard during the glory days. You know, you're the demo that we've lost more than any other. And in recent conversations, I've essentially said, you need to focus on much younger people. You have to capture a new fan base. And I think, Pete, like, you're not you specifically, because you work as a media member and you're covering the team and it's your job. And I think we all know that once you start covering a team and it becomes your job, you have a slightly different level of passion. Although, actually, I think what I do, I don't think that my passion started to wane until just, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. I was always gung-ho and wanted them to win so badly. But I think you and your age group, and not just, by the way, males, but females as well, they've got to target you. Because if they don't get you, they're not going to have anybody in 5 years. So what do they have to do to lock you in and keep you? What's important?
Yeah, I mean, well, not to sound like Ron Rivera, but winning is definitely the most important. But you're right. Like, I was I was a mega diehard fan too. And then doing this job now has changed that quite a bit. But like when Taylor Heinicke was running around last year and scoring touchdowns and doing all this stuff and they had that 4-game winning streak, there's still the fan inside of me that was absolutely right, loving it. So it can be done. And I think winning masked a ton of that. Cause look, we knew that team was still flawed. We knew Heinicke wasn't going to be a starter for a long time, et cetera. But for that 4-game winning streak in November, December, no one cared. And this town was on fire. So that is certainly the most important ingredient. But beyond that, I think it's keeping the marketable players like Terry McLaurin and hoping that Chase Young bounces back and can be that stud who gets all these highlight packages and E60 profiles and shows up on all these shows on Good Morning Football, et cetera. as dumb as it is, I think the jerseys are a good step. That's a totally new look. And I think when that all black uniform goes out on Monday Night Football in Philadelphia this year, there's going to be kids my age and even younger who are like, whoa, that's a sweet look. The stadium definitely will be a thing, but that's going to be more so for the people who live by it. But if that stadium is popping and it's got a lot of other stuff going on and it's got bars and there's like a bullpen type area like at Nats Park and it's just a fun place to be, that's going to matter too. So there are ways to do it, but all those smaller things will not pick up unless it's winning. Winning's kind of like the start of the powder keg, the line of gunpowder on the ground. And if you hit that, then it can sort of run along the floor and pick up the other factors too.
And so what do you think the chances, as long as they're owned by the same person, of them winning? And when we say winning, we're talking about like being considered one of the winning teams in the NFL and developing, you know, a run, a sustained run, and having the reputation of being one of the better franchises and a franchise that's got a chance year in and year out. What do you think the chances of that happening are?
Yeah, I'm not breaking any news here. I think it's pretty low because this franchise has tried just about everything in the 20 years under Dan Snyder, and Dan's the only thing that hasn't changed besides the disappointing performance. But for an 18-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 22-year-old who hasn't seen any winning really at all, when you say glory years for my age group, that's Mark Brunell, that's Todd Collins, Anna Moss, and Chris Cooley. I mean, sneaking into the playoffs and then immediately bowing out are the glory years. But if Dan Snyder's still around and this team starts doing something that this age group hasn't seen before, which is compete and compete consistently, then I think they can absolutely come back. But again, it all goes back to the chances of that happening, which are probably slim. And it's either the one kind of part of this equation we haven't really seen yet is, can a true franchise quarterback outweigh Dan Snyder? We've seen head coaches of all over. We've seen team names, blah, 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 blah. But can an Aaron Rodgers-type quarterback outweigh Dan? Can he be heavy enough to tip the scales in the favor? And maybe one day we'll get the answer to that one, too.
Right. I agree with that. It's so funny because I often think about, and I have conversations with people, including, by the way, you know, I've got three boys who are now, you know, adults. And, you know, for them and for you, you know, you think of Mark Brunell to Santana Moss, you think of Sean Taylor, and, you know, it's like Sean Taylor versus Dexter Manley between the generations of hardcore fans. And it's just so different to think about what you guys realized, you know, was the history and the brightest part of it. So I want to dash you real quickly before we talk about the team. What did you think and what was your reaction to our defensive coordinator's activity on Twitter last night?
I certainly laughed. It might have been immature of me to laugh when Jack Del Rio's telling people to bite D's with quote tweets and then congratulating the Wizards coach for getting a job he got almost a year ago. But Jack has done this before. Like, he will go quiet for a week or two, and then he'll just have a night where he sends off four or five tweets. They're all over the place. They're political. They're not political. They're yelling at fans. They're responding to fans. He's talking about baseball. Like, he is a very eclectic person when he gets on the keyboard, and I don't think it needs to be applied to some grander truth. But I don't know. I've always found Jack and Ron's dynamic pretty intriguing. Ron will say stuff at the podium that's a little more open, at least compared to Jack. Jack will then say, oh, the coach can say what he wants. I'm not going to get into that. They have different styles, and we both know they have big egos and big resumes. So I can't imagine Ron loves his coordinator doing those types of things. But, I mean, Jack's going to come back for a third year, obviously, so it's not necessarily a huge issue in their relationship to the point where there needs to be a change. But, yeah, I don't really know what Jack's doing, and I honestly think I'm going to ask him about it the next time we get him at the podium so I can get at least a little bit of insight into why he's telling people to bite D's and what he gets out of that.
Yeah, as Robert California once said, he may have been into the Australian Reds and the Colombian Whites last night when he was tweeting wildly. All right, let's talk some football. Right now, you know, the offseason for the most part is complete. They might add, you know, somebody at linebacker, you know, a Hightower or a Klein or somebody like that. Who knows? But what do you think this team has a chance to do next year? Like, when people, you know, and you've got a lot of friends who say, well, you know, what'd you think of the offseason? What'd you think of the draft? We all get this all the time. What are they going to do next year? What do you say?
My view on it is that, sure, they've tinkered with free agents. I mean, tinker might even be aggressive for what they've done. And they have a draft class that, starting with Dotson, looks like might be able to contribute pretty early. But it looks like to me that Ron Rivera is basically playing the regression to the mean game and hoping that Jamin Davis matures, William Jackson III understands the system better, Curtis Samuel's healthier. Like, instead of looking for a lot of outside help, he's hoping the inside guys can be what he thinks. Then you mix that with, of course, the better quarterback, and then a what should be lighter schedule. And he's hoping those things lead to a 10-win season. And I see the track to that, certainly. Now, it's not exactly inspiring. It's not an aggressive way of team building. And I understand fans were like, why are we acting like this team won 14 games last year and we're just going to run it back except bring in F.A. Obata and Alex Erickson? So I would have loved Ron to try and make this a better team as opposed to hoping that certain things go their way. But I think Carson Wentz alone is worth a couple wins. I don't think he's necessarily worth a starting quarterback job for 5 years, but he helps. And then if all those other things happen, if Chase Young is at least an 8 to 12 sack guy, if Montez Sweat is around for more, then you just believe in this roster can do what it was supposed to do last year. It's just a year later. So when I say 10 wins, I do believe it, but I don't think the ceiling is much higher than that. And I think Ron sort of just played it safe this offseason in order to keep his job and is banking on a lot of ifs that should become real things. But who knows? Maybe the ifs stay the ifs, and this is another 6 to 7 win campaign, and no one really knows what direction to go with when it comes to Ron.
Where do you think the 10 wins ranks in the division if they were to reach that?
I would say probably second. I think the Eagles, certainly with all their retooling, are set up for the best year in the division, even though I have my doubts about Jalen Hurts. I think the Cowboys are going to come back to earth a little bit between Zeke just becoming a shell of himself, them losing some receivers. I don't think they can lead the league in scoring again, and I don't know if that defense is enough, even with just the beast Micah Parsons and a few other really good players over there to do things. So I think they'll be – I think it's going to be pretty tight at the top between those three teams, maybe an 11, a 10, and an 8 type of breakdown. But I think Washington can feast on the likes of the Lions and the Bears and the Jaguars and then hopefully split in the division, and then they can sneak in or maybe even be just a solidified wild card as opposed to one who has to get hot in December and then and be that last spot.
We're talking to Pete Haley from NBC Sports Washington, part of JP's podcast, covers the team. Follow him on Twitter at Pete Haley, NBCS. Do you care about the players missing these OTA days? Sweat didn't show up. Young, you know, is obviously rehabbing from injury, hasn't shown up for a day. I mean, McLaurin hasn't been there, but we understood that he probably wasn't going to be anyway. At least he wasn't going to be participating on the field. Is this an issue to you or not?
I believe I saw you and your producer there, Brendan Dar, agree that it's not an issue, maybe just with Chase. To me, the more I think about it, it is an issue. And look, Chase, if he's in Colorado grinding his you-know-what off and getting that knee strong and he shows up in week one and goes off for 2.5 sacks, then yes, all is well. But like, and I know there's a schedule, and I know maybe he doesn't trust this medical staff, which has a new head trainer, but fly out here for the first public OTAs, stand on the sideline next to Logan Thomas and the other rehabbing guys, hold a press conference to announce that you're not going to be around anymore, but you wanted to make a good impression, you wanted to show your face, and then you're going to go back to Colorado and continue your recovery. Like, now, because he wasn't there, we're going to talk about it. And it's a Friday segment. We're talking about something that happened on Tuesday, and whether it does matter or not, it's a distraction, and it makes him and Ron look like they're not on the same page because Ron expected Chase to show up, and now Ron is saying he'll eventually show up but doesn't know when that will be. So, yes, I am bothered by it, especially when Chase was sort of scolded for missing this a year ago. It looks like, and maybe all these things aren't true, but it looks like he's not learning from past mistakes. It looks like him and his head coach have a difference in opinion, and it looks like he doesn't care about being a leader. So I am frustrated by it. I don't know if the players are, and again, this might just be such a moot point that nobody cares about it come September, but it would have been nice for him to make it a moot point right now.
Yeah, I think that I do care about it. I just think I'm not going to get myself worked up over it like I did last year. Because at this point, it's like, he does him. I think it's very clear that Chase Young has an idea of what it takes for him to get ready for a season, and the coaching staff disagrees. And maybe even his other teammates disagree, minus Montez Sweat. And at this point, it just is going to come down to performance next year. And what will be really interesting is if he has another terrible year and is healthy. And then what we're going to think about him, then we will be having, let's just say October, you know, late October, early November, he's at one sack again. The conversation of him being a bust of a pick will be a topic.
Oh, it will be. It's going to be uncomfortable. You just sent a shiver down my spine thinking about Chase having one sack in October and us having to talk to him every week. But yes, and like for Trent Williams, who used to always work out down in Houston, I believe, he can do that because he's proven that he's a multi-time every year Pro Bowler and he knows how to get ready. For Chase, I just don't know if he has that sort of clout yet, that sort of, banked support or belief in himself. Yeah. So
the answer is he doesn't. And he doesn't with the staff, and he probably doesn't even in his own position group room at this point. Now, he can change that. He can change that by doing what he did his rookie year. He's got to have that kind of year. I really think he does, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And I was, when they took him, I understood why and I loved it. And everything I saw from him as a rookie, between the impact, and it wasn't just the 7.5 sacks, which is a low number, but destroying Joe Burrow, scoop and score against the Niners, goal line stand against Pittsburgh, eating up Jalen Hurts on a read option. Like, he was all over the place. And then what he did on the sidelines and his leadership and his enthusiasm, like, I was looking at him like, wow, they nailed this. He's going to be the cornerstone. And after last year, my opinion hadn't changed much because, look, it's an ACL and, okay, it's year two and he's got to learn. But now my opinion is teetering a little bit because of this recent OTAs thing. And it's not making me think he's going to be worse than James Smith-Williams, but, like, where's the guy who seemed like he ate, breathed, and slept football? It's not there right now, and that makes me kind of concerned that he thinks he's better than what he is, or he thinks he knows what he's doing, and I don't think he knows what he's doing yet. He needs better counseling, and he's not getting in and not listening to it.
Get out there before the rains get in. Grab yourself, a bunch of cold ones, put them on ice. Make sure they're not White Claws. I mean, something like Bud Light or something. At Pete Haley, NBCS, thanks for doing this. We'll talk soon.
This was a great time, and yes, Mitch is already organizing the Bud Light train, so okay, we're going to be all good. Thank you very much.
Pete Haley from NBC Sports Washington. Eric Flack's going to be our guest next. He's been reporting on the stadium stuff and doing a great job for WUSA-TV9.